Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Grief fundamentally changes who we are and how we see the world. It's painful and heartbreaking, but also transformative and magical. This podcast is about grief and loss, but more importantly, it's about life and living fearlessly. I'm Kelsey Chittick, and welcome to Moms Don't Have Time to Grieve. Welcome, everybody, to the podcast. Today is a good one because we have one of the most well-read, curious, engaged in life and committed to making this experience on planet Earth to be the best. As a guest, this guy is not a Harvard professor. He is not a TED Talk yet, but he does happen to be one of the best football players of all time, NFL Hall of Famer, and one of the greatest tight ends, and one of my very best friends, Tony Gonzalez. Welcome to the show.
I did go to Berkeley, though, Kelsey. I don't know if you knew that, but
I know. But I'd like to talk about the admissions process when you went to Berkeley. I mean, I know we didn't have the scandals yet, but I'm certain there was some type of scandal that included a ball.
Well, and I can catch it. If you can catch it or hit it, I was good at it, and that's how I got in.
No, I love that. That's true. I need to mention that because your intellectual side is underknown and undershared. And Berkeley, I'm going to add that to my list whenever I speak about you. I wanted to have Tony on today for 1,000 reasons, but mostly because, like I said, this man over the last 10 years, but especially the last 5 years, has dug into the meaning of life and death and how we walk through this world with joy. And I think this podcast, although we talk a lot about grief, and that's what this podcast is about, I probably learned more or leaned on Tony the most in terms of just spiritual awareness and what it looks like to come out of hard times and especially great grief in not just an okay way, but an exceptional way. So I'll let Tony share. He's had some experiences of close grief, and obviously my husband was one of his best friends, but I don't know that we need to dig in too much, but I would like you to just share, you know, who has died in your life, you know, that has kind of either informed you about how you wanted to live or taught you something. And then we can get into what you've been studying and how that relates to grief.
Sure. My father, my stepdad, Michael, who you knew, came into my life when I was, I don't know, like around 11 or 12 years old, somewhere around there. And is that he's my father. I have a biological father as well, but he didn't live with us. And I only saw him really once a week. But Michael was around the house with us every single day. So I really viewed him as my father figure in my life. And he passed away probably around my 15th year. My 15th or 16th year. My 15th year in the NFL. But he was that guy that really opened my mind up when I was younger. You talk about me liking to read and liking to, you know, to learn. That would have never happened if it wasn't for him, if it wasn't for Michael, for my pops. That's what we call him. So I'll call him from pops from here on out. But if pops didn't teach me to dive deep, to be curious, to do the extra work, to go out there and learn whatever subject you wanted. He was never like, hey, you got to study this, you got to study that. He was always like, look, whatever it is, if you're reading something, you're learning something. And he was kind of the the patriarch of the family, the one that everybody went to go check in with, to go get lectured from. I guess that's where I get my lecturing abilities from, is from him. But yeah, he passed away and we knew it was coming. He had cancer, but nothing ever prepares you for it. When it happens, I remember he was in hospice, and the typical pop, he was in hospice for a while and he didn't have that long to live. And I thought he was going to, and it was the first time that I had ever planned a trip to Europe as an adult, and came time to leave. And I was going to just stay because I knew he could go at any moment. And he said, brought me in and he said, son, he was an old Jewish man. Michael Saltzman was his last name. And he said, son, I want you to go on that trip. And I was like, nah, I can't. I'm just going to cancel it because I want to be here for you, you know, in case, you know, you're going to die. And he's like, I know I'm going to die. And he goes, son, I'm going to die. That's fine. But this is an opportunity of a lifetime. Don't ruin it because of me. Go see the world. Go to Europe. Enjoy your wife, because I was bringing Toby at the time. Enjoy your bride. It's what he always called her. And have a good time. And then, but typical pop too, he stayed alive the whole trip. And when I got back, he was still around. Now, he was that really late stage hospice. So his brain wasn't quite there when I went to, and I had a chance to go see him again. And he passed away that night. It's like he waited for me. Then he passed away that night. And I remember my mom called the next day and said he passed away. And nothing prepares you. I don't care how prepared you think you are. It still like sent a bolt through my body when she said, hey, he's gone. He died last night. And I immediately start crying and all that stuff. But he was obviously a huge influence in my life. I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for him, because he taught me that intellectual side, the athletic side. Obviously that was a gift from God, but he taught me how to hone it. And that was with your mind and your heart, and the type of books that you read, I think have a huge implication on who you are as a person.
Yeah. And I loved Pops, and it was amazing to see this short Jewish white guy raising these boys that had come from tough circumstances. And Tony has one biological brother and three brothers that his mother brought in, or they all brought in. And it's always been a busy home filled with a lot of personalities and a lot of people, but he really grounded you all. And I think you are very much, you have taken on that role in your family. I do remember Nate getting the call that Michael was sick, and he loved Michael. Nate just thought he was somebody who could talk about all the things. And I remember when he went down there, maybe 3 or 4 days before he passed, and spent time with him. And it changed him to see someone transitioning or on their way to transition, and how beautiful death can be and sad. But he also knew it was okay. And they had a wonderful conversation. I remember Nate feeling really good that he had said what he needed to say to him. So you've lost Michael. And then obviously you've lost Nate, who was one of your best friends for 20 years. And then after losing Nate, you kind of took over as a leader in our family. And it would make me cry, because I think Nate would have hopefully done the same for you all. But what was your experience of losing a best friend at such a young age that obviously we expected wouldn't be around, and you didn't get to say the goodbye to?
No, that's the part about cancer or any terminal illness that you get to learn about before. To me, that's the beautiful part about it, is, okay, well, at least we get a chance to wind down and say goodbye. Where Nate was, all of a sudden, it's like, it's shocking. And obviously it's one of those, you never forget where you're at when you hear the news. You're in disbelief. I was on a shoot working for Fox at a Navy base in Norfolk, Virginia or whatever. God, that was such a tough day, because immediately I'm on set actually filming. So I can't grieve right away. You know, I have to wait and hold it all in until I get to my hotel room, and then I can let it all go. Maybe some people out there might not agree with that, but I was in the middle of working. So I don't have time to, I can't do that right now.
I agree.
But yeah, that's something I obviously had never dealt with. You never think it can happen to you, but that's kind of like, you know, where I'm at today with death. I used to be so scared of death and dying, like really, really scared. You know, in college, I used to dabble a little bit in what's legal now, in marijuana. But I remember I stopped smoking that because I would get so paranoid of my own impending death, and it would scare the shit out of me. But that was kind of like the first, like, I have to face it with Nate. The grieving sucks. It sucks. I don't know if there's any other way to put it. People, you could always try to put it in words, and I think everybody grapples with it and wrestles with it differently. And I don't know if there's a right way or wrong way. That's for you to decide. But it, I think for me, it really changed my life. His death made me a better person. I don't know if that's insensitive, but I think that's kind of like, I'm sure we'll dive into Stoicism. That's kind of what a big principle in Stoicism is, amor fati, and that's love your fate. And no matter what happens, you have to spin it in a way that's going to make you better and make you stronger. And I do know this, that Michael, Pops, and Nate, there's no way, at least for me, the way they felt towards me, that they would ever want me to be a worse off because they passed. They want me to be better off. They want me to learn from it. They want me to level up. They want me to get better. And that's what I learned from Nate, watching the strength that you had, watching the strength that his children had, Jack and Addison. I mean, when Jack spoke at the celebration of life, I mean, it's like blew the house off. I get emotional just thinking about his speech. It was the best one by far. And seeing how people step up in these hard times. I don't know. I think death now to me is more of a welcome now, honestly. I'm not looking for it to happen today, but it's more of a welcome. It's a part of life. It's a beautiful thing. It's a sad thing, but it's a beautiful thing because that's where the growth is. I think there's tremendous growth when somebody passes in your life.
Oh, I love that. That might be a one-liner, someone. Death, I look at death as a welcome. It's funny because of every person that I've been helped through this past 4.5 years, you are the one that the main message to me was stop being afraid. And I think what death does, if you are able to make it to the other side, you're so high on life because you're so clear that this is just the game. This is just the fun part. But wherever we go next, obviously Nate and Michael are fine. They seem to be doing great. They didn't come back, so it must not be bad. They left as heroes in the sense that they left their families better. And they left with a lot of joy. And I think there's a bunch of different ways people can die and there's a bunch of different circumstances. But I do believe that if we can just move an inch out of considering life good and death bad, and just kind of open our minds up to possibly saying, what if they're both just what they are? They're not good or bad. That's something I've been really curious about lately because death and grieving feels awful internally. But somewhere along the line, we decided that things that feel bad aren't good and things that feel good are good. And, you know, when you do a workout and you're burning out your legs or you're swimming a race, it hurts really bad, but it's not bad. It's actually exceptional. It's actually one of the best things you can do. And I think when you try meth, from what I've heard, it feels really good. And I just don't think that's a wise thing to do all the time. So if we could stop running for the feeling of good or bad, and more accept that there are certain things in life that just are. And death is just one of those things we can't argue about. It's going to happen. We know that, but we all forget all the time that it is as important as living. And what if we took the judgment around someone leaving at 42 as bad? What if we took the story of, well, he died at 42, it was too young? That's a narrative that we just don't know. Who says it was too? Did someone send down a banner that said like, oh man, wanted him to get to 86, but we halved it for him. Unfortunate. No, he just jumped and went. So what are your thoughts on like, what is Stoicism? We both read a ton and obviously the not reacting to things in grief, especially. And I don't mean feelings. Feelings come and go. You should be devastated when you're devastated, sad when you're sad, overwhelmed, joyful. I'm saying the deep knowing inside of you that all is well. How do you get to that? And what are some of the practices that has helped you not react and respond so much to life, but more inhabit what is?
Well, you know, the thing I love about Stoicism, they say once you hear truth, it's so simple. It makes so much sense. When you hear some of this stuff, sometimes you're like, man, God, it's like common sense. Like control your own actions. That's one of the main principles of Stoicism, is control your own thoughts and your own actions. And what everybody else does is out of your control. So there's no reason why you should be terribly upset about something that you had no control over anyway. It's almost kind of arrogant to get upset about it because why do you think you had the power to control that in the first place? So if someone cuts me off in traffic, or where it used to enrage me, now I can accept that, okay, I didn't do anything to bring that on myself. Also, you need to accept that people are idiots, including me. Like I'm a moron sometimes, and the world is not without them. They're all over the place, and they're going to be here. They've been here since the beginning of time. They're going to be here to the end of time. And for you to wish against it is just you're only hurting yourself. There's going to be people that don't have the same beliefs as you. There's going to be people that do things that you think are ridiculous. And a lot of people, they lose sleep over that. And I've gotten to the point now where I'm not losing sleep over that anymore. It doesn't affect me that much anymore. I can hear terrible news and then I can go to a more fat thing and go, I love my fate. I'm going to get it right. I'm going to make it better. And then another core belief, getting back to memento mori. I think you've heard of memento mori, haven't you?
Remind me again what it is in English.
So memento mori is a huge stoic belief, kind of like amor fati, but it's basically saying that you're going to die.
Right.
Like contemplate death daily. It's a big principle. Probably one of the main principles of stoicism is accepting your own death, knowing that you're going to die, knowing that the people around you could die today. Like you saw Nate, you said goodbye, you went on your trip and you never saw him again. Mm-hmm. Now, if you had practiced memento mori, you don't ever leave anybody thinking that, okay, taking it for granted that I'll see them tomorrow. And a big belief is when you kiss your children at night, go over in your head that, hey, they could die tonight. And it's not a morbid thought. A lot of people go, well, that's morbid. That's ridiculous. I would never think that way. Or you think that you have the power to bring it on, which to me is ridiculous. You're not going to bring their death. And they say, just like you're not going to, oh, I wish the stock market would go in my favor. You're not going to affect it by saying it out loud. So you look at your child and before you give them a kiss, you say, they could die tomorrow. Or this kid, what if this children has cancer and not here next year? And so you'll hug them so much more tighter. If you say this about your own death, man, I could die today. Well, shit, I better go out there and I better study my ass off. I better read this book that I want to read. I better, when I go out for this audition, if I'm doing television or when I'm up on this stage, I'm going to let it all hang out because I could die tomorrow. I could get hit by a car. My plane could crash. Anything could happen. And I'm okay with that. It's not a scary thought. It's actually a motivating thought. It's a fulfilling thought. It's a motivation. Let's go get it. And that's the way my view is with death now. And it helps me sleep a whole lot better. I really believe you'll never fulfill what you can and what you're capable of if you don't get comfortable with your own death. You have to be willing to die and accept your death in order to go out there and see the best version of yourself. That's the most free you will ever be. It will give people the best version of yourself and you will be able to see what you're truly capable of.
No, I mean, you said it perfectly. That's the biggest change that I have experienced over the last 4.5 years. As you know, the first 40 years of my life, I just wanted to keep everything okay. I just really didn't want anybody to die. I didn't want anybody to get hurt. And now the opposite has happened. I've taken this experience of losing Nate and said, not only are we okay, but we're thriving. Not only am I more excited about life than ever, because I know it can end so quickly, but I am fascinated by the whole experience. And I think there's a big difference. Like you said, I used to not want to talk about it. I didn't want to talk about getting sick. I didn't want to talk about anybody dying. And so what life did is it just said, here, we're just going to hand it all to you on a plate, Kelsey, over a couple of years, because you are so locked up, you're pretty much dead anyway. So I think a lot of us that had a ton of fear were walking around living dead because we couldn't live because we were trying to avoid dying. What I think death has taught me is that, like you said, we have today, so crush it. And it's okay. Like we don't want to lose people because it's uncomfortable and sad and hard, but we can't control it. We don't have as much. I think for a long time, we have a lot of free will, but not in the areas I thought. We have free will of thought. We don't have free will of how everything happens. And if the car in front of you, you know, veers off, or if someone you love dies, that's not up to us. There's a greater force that is determining that stuff. But the one thing that nobody can take from you, and I guess Nelson Mandela nailed this for, you know, a lot of people have gotten this way before we did, is just your mind and how you choose to react and respond. And I think people always ask me, oh, you seem to be doing so well. And what I want to tell people is that it was a full-time job to decide that I wanted to be here 5 years later. And if you're grieving and you're in the part where it feels dark and scary and overwhelming and just like life will never be the same. You're right. It won't ever be the same, but you get to choose what that new will look like. And I think you've always reminded me of that because you were clear that you only have one shot here. So I think I've never knew you to be afraid. I don't think we ever talked about that before when you were more afraid of death, but I think now when you get excited about the time you have here, as opposed to counting down till you're going to leave, everything switches. What would you say to someone? I mean, do you remember what you said to me right when he died? Do you remember some of the advice that you gave me? Because I'll tell you some advice you gave me a couple years later that I'm going to share once I started dating.
I don't think I gave you any advice when he passed. At least I don't remember.
You know what you did? You were the one person, and it wasn't that you didn't let me be sad, but you didn't let me feel sorry for myself. Mm-hmm. You were very quick when I'd start to go down a dark hole, and you would sometimes just joke, which I obviously believe humor is the best thing to do when people are in pain. I know we're going through a time in our culture where we really want people to feel, and I get that, but we might have swung a little too far because there are times in life where you need to say, I'm going to actually set that aside so I can be present in this moment, because we can get taken away with our emotions. So if I was like really telling this story that I'd made up in my head of Nate should have been here and how can this be and how will we survive, you'd be like, enough. We're good. Like, yeah. You're good. Like, we're here. Take a deep breath. You talking about him again? Like, he's fine. You're fine. Look around. Take a breath. Are you okay? You're okay. You might be sad, but let's go. Let's go do something. Let's rewire your brain. Let's try something. I mean, we went to Costa Rica and they forced me to zip line because they're like, I was like, you can't zip line. Like, I'm the only mother. If I die, then they'll be orphans. And then I'm just not going to go upside down on a tree in a forest, people that don't even speak my language, that I don't understand what the rules are. And you guys were like, don't come back unless you do it. Like, just don't even come back. Like, what type of loser are you? Like, you've been through all this other stuff. Now you're not. And I'll tell you, those people put me upside down, arms open. And it's like a big picture I have blown up in my office. And the joy on my face is freedom. And, you know, I before I got into that harness that did not look very harnessed, I thought, if I die in the jungle, so be it. It would be worse to die sitting in the house internally knowing I'm not living.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'll tell a little bit of story. So I'm gonna walk you guys through what it's like to be best friends with Tony Gonzalez. So I called him. I said, I need to start dating. I need to have sex. I've got to get over the hump, literally. And I hadn't had a lot of partners prior to my marriage, like any more, very, very small number. And Tony was like, it's go time. Like, it's go time. And I was like, okay, well, what do I do? Like, how do I do this? Like, I'm a widow. And he said, there is only one piece of advice I have. Once you start having sex, don't you cry. Whatever you do, nobody likes a crier. And he was adamant about it. And I was like, but what if I get sad? He's like, nope, there is no crying in sex. There's no crying in baseball. You are going to get up on there and you're going to have a good time. But the last thing a man wants to see is some woman, after they've made love, have one tear trickling down the side of her face because she's thinking about her dead husband. And I remember when it happened and I almost cried and you came into my voice, I mean, into my head. And I was like, nope. And I still think there was one tiny tear that just like dripped out the side. But mostly what you did was you gave me parameters And I think during grief, sometimes people need a little bit of swaddling, because if not, you can come kind of hysterical and be all crazy. And you are the king of swaddling for me. You go like, nope, this is how it's going to be. And yep, you're going. And I think everybody needs a friend like that when you are going through great transitions and transformations. You need the supportive friend that sits with you and lets you sob. Mm. And you also need the friend that goes like, we're going this way and you're coming with us. And that's just how it's going to be. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I am that way. Like I always tell my friends, like, don't call me if you're looking for that hardcore sympathy. Like call me if you're looking to get pumped up. And the reason I feel like I'm that way is because everybody who's listening, we all go through shit. We all go through sadness. We all go through shame. I've had my fair share of that growing up, and it hits people differently, but I've seen it stifle me and my growth and really hold me back. And so I do know this. One of the things that, you know, I say all the time is life takes off on the other side of fear.
Always.
The stuff that you're most afraid of is the stuff you have to confront. And it's scary. And it all begins with that. It's scary to get back in the saddle, to get over the hump, like you said, to say goodbye, to never see somebody again. It's a scary feeling to know that you got to go through life without that loved person, that loved one anymore. But at the same time, it's like, well, let's go. You're not going to beat me. You're not going to beat me. And I mean, I say, who's the opponent I'm talking about life. It's, we're all going through it, but I want to succeed. And I know it's going to keep challenging me. It does not ever end. And I don't want it to end, because that's not how it works. You can't have light without dark. You can't have courage without being afraid of something. I mean, so fear is part of it. It's going to be there. It's a beautiful thing. Embrace it, make friends with it, and then spar with it. It's a good sparring partner, but it's there to make me better. It's my bitch is what I would say. Right. Like I'm here to, and it's my training part. It's my coach. Like it's my pointer. I really believe that when you go through that fear, that's where the ultimate growth is. That's where the ultimate, when you're hanging upside down in a jungle in a third world country, that is the best feeling that you'll ever have. If you were afraid going into it, jumping out of a helicopter or jumping out of a plane, parachuting, I recommend anybody who's scared to do that, but wants it, go do it. Trust me, when you hit the ground, it's going to be the best feeling you've ever had in your life. Now, if you don't want to do it, if it's something you're like, no, actually, I really don't want to do it, then don't do it. But for me, like when I did that, that was one of the most growth experiences I've ever had, is jumping out of a plane, because I was deathly scared of it. I thought I was going to die.
Right.
But I always wanted to do it. And so I'm so glad I did. That's how I judge things that I do in my life now, is by what scares me the most is what I want to cling to the most. And obviously family and close friends, it scares me. Don't get me wrong. I'm scared. I get scared sometimes that they could die. But that's what draws me even closer to them, though. I'm gonna make it work for me in that manner. I want it to make me even closer to them, using death as a tool to make our relationship even better and more present.
Yeah. Obviously, I believe that you've honed in on this skill of personal growth. And we talk a lot, and I mean, obviously you're mostly known for football and just what you did on the field and what you accomplished. How has that transitioned into this second part of your life? I love that we're both in the second half, that you have, what are the processes that have, because you're a totally different person than you were 20 years ago when we were in Hawaii and you and Nate were at some God knows what type of club doing God knows what. Yeah. And enlightened is not what I would say you two were. I would say you were Neanderthals, disasters. And we had to work really hard to
stop.
No, but you've grown up, obviously you're older, you've got kids, but what are the practices? And this is what I talk to people a lot. When you want to get through something, you can't do that on a hope and a prayer. Just like if you want to be a Hall of Fame football player, you don't just go out there and do it. There is a process to get to healing. There's a process to getting to excellence. What do you do each day that you're committed to in terms of your personal growth to get to this place where you can have those thoughts and those direction in your life, like the things I'm afraid of I'm going to go towards, and I have the tools to do it?
I think, first of all, it's always evolving. If you would ask me this last year, it would have probably been a different type of routine, very similar, but still different. I think what I do now as of late is I like to journal. Mm-hmm. I call it radical writing. Every morning I'll get up pretty early before everybody else is up and I'll do like a little exercise routine. And then I will write. So why are you laughing?
Just let me tell you guys have seen his physique. Have you seen Tony? You think probably he like eats really clean and does like awesome workouts every day. What he does is he does 3 squats in his kitchen and then he does like 2 lunges and then he's like maybe 5 or 10 push-ups and that's his workout. So just don't get fooled by the rocks that he's got. Okay. He was born that way.
I do it every day. Without fail.
Ridiculous. But
one thing that I've done lately is I call it radical writing. And basically it's you write, you don't lift the pen up. And I get, and I always tell people, and you've heard this before, I'm not the first one to say it, you don't have to be brutally honest. Right. But sometimes I feel like with myself, with others, I don't have to be. With me, I have to go there sometime. And so this radical writing that I've been doing, I've been so completely honest with myself and where I'm at, why I'm at where I'm at, why I want to go where I want to go. I believe the biggest question you can always ask yourself is why. Affirmations are great, but if you're going to say I'm great, okay, why? What makes you so great? And write that out. And then you'll be able to get a clear understanding. You get so much clarity on where you're going and how you're going to get there and why you want to get there. I think it's been a huge get for me. It's changed a lot of how I deal with things. I believe reading from whatever source, there's no right way. To me, it's all the same shit when it comes down to it anyway. What somebody's saying, and I don't mean to call it shit, my wife gets mad at me. It's all the same stuff, the same beautiful stuff, right. Whether you're talking about a religion, a Christianity or a Hindu or, you know, even in atheism, like the underlining themes are be kind, be courageous, be powerful, be calm. That's another one that I've been really, really concentrating on. Be confident. Like all that stuff goes into making you a better person and whatever belief system you have. I'm sure that's a core value underneath it all. And I don't really get caught up in the whole dogma and the rules and regulations. I want I want to go to the deeper source of things. And that's what I'm always constantly reminding myself when I'm writing. And I think the best way to do that is obviously to read and to be around people that are into the same stuff that you're into. I mean, that's another thing in Stoicism. You are, they ever say you're the average of the top 5 people that you surround yourself with. That to me, that is no doubt. They say if you added up the top 5 people that you hang out with, you added up their income, that's where you'll probably land, the average of that.
Oh, I got some work to do. I really up-leveled with my crew.
Well,
I'm bringing the average down in our group. I'm sorry to say that.
Well,
don't worry. There's still time.
There's still time. But yeah, I do all that stuff.
What about meditation? Are you still meditating?
I still meditate every morning before I even get out of bed. When that alarm goes off, I don't get right up. And by the way, people talk, what I'm saying to when anybody's hearing what I say and you're saying, oh, I like that idea. Or you hear somebody else, whether it's Tony Robbins or any of these people out there that tell you what to do. People say, like when I started meditating, I sat lotus style, legs crossed, and I was closing my eyes, keeping great posture. And I was like, man, my back hurts. You know, 17 years in the NFL, my knees hurt. And so now I literally just lay there, put my hands over my chest, close my eyes, and start just focusing on the things. And a lot of it is affirmation based, but then why? So why? Why am I so great? Why am I so powerful? Why am I so calm? Why am I such a good dad? Like, why am I such a good husband? Why do I keep going? Why? And I want to answer that. And I see it. And it's the same stuff that I did when I played football too. That's the funny thing.
Interesting.
I think how you approach your spiritual growth or whatever you want to talk, whatever words you want to use to describe that is how you approach your job growth. It's how you approach your husbanding or parenting. It's how you, Do you visualize yourself? That's what I did in sports. I would always visualize myself on the field and I would do it where I would smell the grass and I could hear the crowd. I could see the eyes of the quarterback telling me the play before the play. I would do all this before the game. I do this now with my life, everything that I'm doing. I want to see it before it happens and feel into that future. And I want to be grateful for it. And I want to be confident too. I was so damn confident when I played football. But then during my transition, when I got done playing, I lost that confidence. For whatever reason, where it's like, no, when you walk somewhere, you have to know that you belong there. You have to feel like I'm here. I'm the man. I'm supposed to be doing this. And then there's, it goes on and on and on with everything that, that I learned from football. It's everything that I'm finally starting to do. What is it? 8, 9 years now, starting to do into my second career, whether that's broadcasting or acting now, that's the way I'm approaching it. I'm kind of just taking those same values that made me great on the field,
right?
Which are very spiritual values too. Living in the moment. That's another thing too. Artists, they talk about artistry. My wife says, oh, you're not really an artist, but I think playing sports is the most artistic that you could ever get. You work on your plays, but as soon as that game starts, nobody knows what's going on. I mean, I can run 10 yards and know I have a 10 yard out, but there's going to be a guy over there. What if the quarterback gets in trouble? He has to spin out of there. Now everything is on the move. Everything is just reaction now. You're in the moment. And that, to me, that's being so creative. And the really, really good ones are the most creative at it. And it's like that in life. You have this script where you want to go and how you're going to do it. But guess what? Stuff can change at any second. And you got to be ready to adjust. And you got to be able to be creative in the moment. And that takes fearlessness. That takes being calm, being really relaxed. I think all that is a spiritual understanding too, is being calm, being like Tom Brady on the field, relaxed into it, being a Zen master. They're calm and relaxed. That's a very spiritual value to me that I've learned. And so anyways, I'm getting long winded here, but no, that's all the stuff that I go it. Into now that creates who I am as a person.
I think present moment, at least for me, when if somebody's going through grief, there's tons of gifts when things go bad in your life, because it switches everything up. But one of the things is that you become really focused on each breath because you're in pain and you can't worry about tomorrow because you're barely getting through today. So I remember after about a year and a half after Nate had died, when life started to get back to normal and I started to start worrying about things in the future or obsessing over things of the past. Whereas for about a year, I was right here. I was just right here. And it was like, it was peaceful and it was quiet. And all I did was just get through that moment. And I realized as I started to get back into regular life, when the, you know, hardest part of grief, I missed that. And so that's something that I now have to work at, to not get caught up again in what's going to be or where we're going in 2 months or what some conversation I had. Just be right here today and stay loose. I think stay loose and calm is basically just what you're saying. And that's what you did as a football player. And that's what you do now as a man. You really do walk the talk, walk the walk, walk the talk and walk the walk. You do all of those things. You mean a lot to me because you've been excellent in a lot of areas of your life, but I really believe that you are just getting started on what will be your legacy in a different way. So we'll end this because we could talk for a long time, but what if you were to die tomorrow, and since we're not afraid to talk about it, we'll just say that, how would you want to be remembered? Do we have time? Producers, can we roll the tape for another 20?
That's funny. Let me go to my notes. How do I want to be? I think if I think, you know, by the way, and my kids call me corny for saying this, but I've been going over the letter C for whatever reason. It's the best letter in the alphabet. Stay with me now, because the letter C can guide you in almost anything. And when I'm talking about, like, curious, this is what I want to be known for: curious, compassionate, capable, confident, competent. There's so many C's out there. Caring is another one. What I say, compassionate,
yeah.
Compassion, concentrating, charismatic, like the C's is what I want to be known for, you know, all those things. But I guess if I had to pick one that was the most, that I think will, as somebody that was just like everybody else, that had the shit scared out of them by life, but went through it. Yeah. I think that's the most important part. It's funny how you just said pain is the ultimate
teacher
that can make you present. It's funny how I had this migraine headache yesterday, and it's funny how it just focused me so in the moment, because it was such intense pain. And in my head, I felt like I had a knife in my freaking face. And I was just sitting there where, like, I'm tearing out of my eye, and everything was just flashing, right? I was so present.
Yeah.
And that's what pain does. That's what death does when it happens to you. But I'm telling you, in that moment, I felt like it put everything in perspective for me of where I'm at, what's important and what's not important. And so I answer that other question, but I want to leave it with this. I think if anybody who's out there going through that pain, understand that let it bring you to that presence. Mm-hmm. It's going to give you the answers. That present moment is going to help you shape your future. And it's a gift. It really is a gift. I know it doesn't feel like it, but that pain, the pain, the presence of that pain brings is a gift. And don't waste it. Honestly, a lot of people can waste it, and they do waste it. According to my opinion,
or they numb it, or they drink it, or they swallow a pill, or they eat it. But yes, we'll do a part two at some point. I love you dearly. Thank you for the time, and we'll be back.
Alrighty.
Thanks for having you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and remember, keep going. It gets better.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.